Saturday Night Live with Casey Affleck is over, but we're just getting started here on the Saturday Night Live live post-show recap. And now, here are the two guys better known by their nicknames, Hog Taker and Log Maker. I'm Rob Cisternino. Here's Rich Tackenberg. Rich, how are you?
I'm good. I'm not sure if I'd rather be Hog Taker or Log Maker, but it's good to see you regardless.
Hog Taker, certainly, all the way.
Yeah.
Anyway, so first, my apologies to everybody as I am trying to get through this show today with a bad case of laryngitis. I was hoping to have my voice back today, but it is going to be a little bit of a rough sledding, and I hope it's not going to be too unpleasant of an experience for you guys listening to the show, Rich.
Oh, no, we'll get through. Don't worry. But I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah. So very sorry about that. And also a note at the top of for a double dose of some bad news, I guess. So I just want to start off the show this week and mention that I'm sure it's going to be a surprise to most of the listeners of the show, but that this is going to end up being the last weekly SNL recap that we're going to do here on Post Show Recaps, Rich. It's been 5 years ago. Last month, I checked, was the first SNL recap that we did. But it just is a lot. It's a big commitment on my part. And I do apologize. I know a lot of people really enjoy it, but I just can't keep the commitment for 2017.
Yeah, bummer to say goodbye to the audience. Of course, we all understand, you know, Rob and what you're doing. So no harm, no foul, but certainly a bummer. It's been, and we'll talk about it again, it's been such a blast doing this with you for 5 years. So a shame to say goodbye, but totally understand.
Yeah, and I do apologize about the sudden notice for everybody, but this was something that, you know, I had been thinking about internally for a while, and ultimately made the call during the week that we were going to wrap up the SNL recap, and I was going to focus my attention on some of the other podcasting that I'm doing and try to take on some fewer commitments in 2017. So I do apologize about that for everybody that's out there that enjoys this show. And it doesn't mean that there won't be times in the future when Rich and I won't get back together to talk about some important things happening in the world of SNL.
Yeah, and I'm glad we made it to the end of the 2016. You know, we made it right to the end of the Christmas episode. So we wrap up with SNL as they do for the year.
Okay, Rich. Well, let's talk about this episode, which featured a number of alumni. We get two alumni, I guess, unless we're counting Alec Baldwin as a cast member at this point in time.
Yeah, or ironically counting him as an alumni, which is, you know, him and John Goodman are such stalwarts of the show. They feel like alumni, although they haven't hosted. You know, as we suspected, Alec Baldwin took last week off and he came back to do his Trump impression. And I just thought a lot of fun right out of the gate. I mean, I thought that, you know, what I do like when they do, you know, these political pieces is instead of doing, hey, we're recreating that press conference or we're recreating that debate, this is a completely fictionalized what if kind of situation. And so not only do we get sort of the Christmas of the Trumps, we get to see, you know, what it's like when he, you know, when he gets to see Vladimir Putin and their conversation. So I just thought a lot of fun of a lot and a lot of different sort of mini pieces. We got to take a lot of fun shots on a lot of different topics here, which I really liked.
Yeah. Of course, as you predicted, Rich, Alec Baldwin was going to be there for the mid-season finale. And of course, he does not disappoint there. One of my favorite runners during the sketch was Trump saying a couple of different times, am I being Scrooged? Am I being Scrooged? Because yes. I hate that. Yes. I hate that when I'm visited by the three ghosts.
Yes. We, you know, and we saw an interesting sort of subtle turn in the character of Donald Trump here, where we went from, you know, self-aggrandizing, or ego or whatever, or manipulative person, whether not to pass any judgment on the real person for the purposes of this conversation. We've really moved into the sort of the George W. Bush of Will Ferrell in that he's an oaf. You know, I noticed it very early when he talked about, okay, now he just has to appoint find someone to be president, and he has to be reminded that he is the president. And I love the line when he said, can I just do it 3 days a week like Howard Stern, which was very reminiscent of the Will Ferrell character. And we'll see that when when Putin is talking to Rex Tillerson, while they're sort of, planning the world domination, he wants to go after Vanity Fair. So I think you can see where they're sort of settling into, the character. I don't suspect. I think like us, come January, Alec Baldwin will not be, covering SNL. So we'll see what they do or how much they sort of downplay it. But I thought it was an interesting note how they sort of changed the character and sort of really refining how they're going to make fun of him going forward.
So Cecily appears in the sketch, and I think it's the first appearance of Melania in a live sketch. We saw her in a couple of the Melania interludes and certainly the Melania Aid music video with the Alec Baldwin Trump. But this is the first appearance of her in a cold open.
Yes. Yeah. The two of them together live. And I thought they, it was a nice energy. They did a nice energy. I still love the Kate McKinnon character. I thought she did a wonderful job. And then fun to see John Goodman to play Rex Tillerson. I don't know why we needed John Goodman. I feel like there's plenty of other cast members who could have done just as good a job. But I love John Goodman. So it really upped the energy of this and the warm hello he gives Putin, or as he calls him, Pootie, I thought was such a wonderful sort of take. I will say, and of course, Beck Bennett doing a really fun Vladimir Putin, clearly making a caricature out of this guy. I like that every time that he plays Putin, it's always with the shirt off. I just love that that's become the character. I thought there was a really lovely piece of political commentary sort of nestled in when Putin is talking to Trump. They're talking about, whether or not they Russia had fixed the election. And he says, so you trust me more than your own CIA. And I thought that was a beautiful little subtle line about Trump mixed into some very silly jokes.
Yeah. And then, of course, Putin presents the elf on a shelf to Trump, which is very popular at my house. And then
although this one needs to be near your wireless router. So maybe a little bit different than your elf on a shelf, which I thought was very cute.
Yeah. And then I really did think that it was funny when Tillerson and Putin are going over the map and then discussing where the oil was going to be drilled, and Trump really just became a third wheel.
Yes. Yeah. Very, very silly. Almost as if he didn't understand what was going on, which I thought was very telling of the sketch. Mm-hmm. I also like, while it was not necessarily a defining finish to the sketch, I like that that Putin and Tillerson get to say live from New York. So we actually get the energy going into the opening credits that we need, which I really appreciated. It was nice energy for live from New York at Saturday night.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's get into the monologue of Casey Affleck, who we got to see here with both Alec Baldwin and John Goodman lurking about.
Yeah, this was the first thing I'll say, it's interesting when you see Casey Affleck come out, and I understand apparently he's got this beard for a movie role. But, as soon as he comes out and starts talking, I'm looking at the beard and thinking, what an interesting challenge the writers have in front of them. When you've got a host with that kind of facial hair, you can't just have him play the regular dad in a sketch or the boss in an office sketch. That it really limits what you can do with this guy. And in fact, we're going to see him play a dirtbag, Dunkin' Donuts customer, and he's going to play Jesus, and then he's going to play a guy playing Jesus's father Joseph, and he's going to play an elf. Like they really, other than maybe the Microsoft sketch, they really had to sort of write around the characters that he could play, because he was not willing or able, but I would guess willing when you're booking a show, the SNL this far in advance, willing to shave. So I thought that for the episode, it kind of put them in an interesting situation. I'd love to know sort of what happened behind the scenes there.
Yeah, that's interesting. I did like some of the start and stops that came up, and I felt like that we had shades of this from the Kristen Wiig monologue that she did a couple of weeks ago, where it's like she was going to start to play the guitar, and then they took it away, and then they brought it back, that he was going to start to sing. So I thought that there were funny moments in this, even if it was not like a fully fleshed out idea.
Oh, it felt like for some reason that they had written this monologue during the cold open. Like this really felt thrown together. I did love a shout out to us, whether real or imagined, that when John Goodman and Alec Baldwin do come out for a cameo, that Casey Affleck calls out that it would be a really lame thing for them to do, given that they had already appeared in the cold open. I was like, Rich's rules of cameo makes it to the monologue. That is my legacy for this podcast. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yes. Yes. You nailed it.
Yeah. It was very fun. So you know, sure. Black Santa. I don't know that there was really anything that really came of that. But certainly cute and fun. And I will say this was mercifully short. So I like that we didn't really have much of a premise to hang our hat on. So we just made a lot of funny jokes with some mostly very funny people and then got out.
Okay. Rich, then we have one of our pre-taped pieces from tonight, and we had the Dunkin' Donuts to go app.
Yes. Again, we'll never know, but, talking about the fact that, Saturday Night Live is committed to a number of actual branded entertainment spots. I wouldn't have thought Dunkin' Donuts because they are not a national advertiser, although certainly watching the New York feed, it was littered with Dunkin' Donuts commercials at almost every break. I certainly think that this probably was a one of those branded entertainments because, again, it was interesting that they are doing a commercial about Dunkin' Donuts and yet never once made even the slightest joke about Dunkin' Donuts. It was all how great Dunkin' Donuts is, but look at this dirtbag, the typical, customer of Dunkin' Donuts. So interesting. But overall, I did think this was funny. I think what we're going to see here is Casey Affleck as the crazy one, as the comic lead is going to be much better in a pre-taped sketch that can be edited than he is in a live sketch. And yet here I thought he did a very fun job. It was very silly and I enjoyed it.
Rich, are you a big Dunkin' Donuts fan?
The Dunkin' Donuts craze is post my time. I mean, Dunkin' Donuts was not, I think they just had black coffee for 25 cents the last time I lived in the Northeast. So I just know them for, believe it or not, donuts. Seem good enough. How about you? Are you a Dunkin's? You got your Dunkin's on?
I mean, I would always prefer a Starbucks, but, if I'm going to get like a breakfast sandwich or something like that, I know. But all the Boston people I know swear by the Dunkin' Donuts.
Got it. And I didn't know it to be a specific Boston thing because I knew Dunkin' Donuts from, certainly from New York. They, growing up in New York. And I think my family is probably more of a Dunkin's family than a Starbucks family. I do like at the end when he throws the coffee at the guy's windshield and yells, "Go back to Starbucks." I thought that was a nice sort of out on that.
Do you think that this is a character Casey Affleck wanted to play, or this is just something that just worked out that he can do it?
Well, I think when your first movie role is in Good Will Hunting, your roots are in, I want to make fun of Boston. I want to sort of play the Boston. So I don't know that I suspect that you're right. I think that this was probably a character he wanted to do, or at least brought up as something that he could do. And again, this character sort of, the beard was justified. It did not stick out as, why does this character have this weird beard? So I think it all sort of fit together very well.
Okay. Rich, we have our third alumni sighting as Fred Armisen returns to do the sketch about Microsoft introducing a new office working robot who happens to be also gay.
Yeah, I think it's nice that we can go out on the podcast with one more Rich's Rules of Cameo that I don't know that has ever actually come up before. So this is my third Rich's Rules of Cameo, which is you don't start a scene on stage. A cameo is the energy of the cameo is always from the walk on, not from, lights, fade from black and suddenly there's the person. So I think we would have gotten much more of a Fred Armisen boost if we just would have started, with him not on stage and then him coming out to join McKinnon. But that said, I thought this was a very pleasant sketch. I thought this was a very I loved the idea of the sketch. I loved that we are now in such a politically correct world that the normal person can't even comment on why would you intentionally choose to make a robot gay without it turning into, you know, why would you ask that? Do you have a problem with gay people? So I thought the premise was very, for a very silly sketch, I thought it was a very ingenious premise. I don't know that it went anywhere for me. I think once we got to the Kyle Mooney part, where it just became broader and broader, and they didn't really give our host Casey Affleck a lot of places to go. This is the one time where he's a straight man that there's no justification for the situation, why he looks the way he does. I don't know that I don't know that his reactions gave us enough of the big comedy that we needed here.
Yeah. I thought that this sketch was going to be where we had the robots that kept bringing out the hors d'oeuvres, that yes. We had an earlier introducing robot sketch. Was that this season? Or that was the end of last season.
That was no. That was this season. Yeah.
And I thought that's what we were doing again. I was happy that we were doing something different. Beck Bennett looked incredible as a robot.
Yeah, no, actually, I think the wardrobe and makeup on that was excellent. And he did a very good job. But overall, I thought he did an excellent job there.
Yeah. Rich, now something like this, does this come up? Does Fred Armisen have this idea, or they have this sketch and Fred Armisen is available and he shows up and they just let him take it?
It's a good question. If I had to guess, I think I would think that this was probably a Fred Armisen idea, because I don't know why else Fred, like, there's no need. I mean, this easily could have been, you know, Mikey Day. It could have been Bobby Moynihan. It could have been, it could have been another female cast member. It could have been A.D. Bryant. So I don't know why it needed to be him. There was nothing about it. And then also, there wasn't much to his performance in the sketch that really anchored it. So I really do wonder if maybe it was an idea that he had, as you said. I think that there's a very good chance that's the case.
Yeah. Also, it does seem like a Fred Armisen piece as well.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what we're going to do is go a little bit out of order. We'll talk about the Jingle Barack coming up next, and we'll bring James in to talk about that and Chance the Rapper after we talk about the sketch of the three people who got to meet Santa Claus, or at least the two people who got to meet Santa Claus and the one person who got to meet Santa Claus's helper, Crinkle Mouse.
Yeah, I don't think we have to tell anyone who's listening to this podcast, this was our third outing. They first had done it with Ryan Gosling a year ago and then brought it back with Brie Larson in May last year. So this is our third time out. Format, it is 100% now Mad Libs. I mean, everyone sits in the same seats. You know, it's always AD and Bobby. So everything about this is the same. So this one I'm mixed on, because what they say about, you know, bad pizza is still better. You know, it's still better than no pizza. I thought this was by far the weakest. I don't think that it was because the writing was worse than the first two. I just feel like we all now know the rhythm. So there's no surprise to the fact that, you know, that Cecily's character turned out to be, having a bad time while everyone else had a good time. We all knew exactly where this was going. So I think that was a little challenging for me. Clearly, you didn't have the case of the giggles. I mean, and I think you could see that because the audience wasn't going crazy, and everyone kind of knew where this was going. AD held it together. Bobby held it together. The guest host held it together. Only I think maybe a little bit. Kate McKinnon started to break a little bit. I think was definitely the weakest of the three. But that said, a very solid sketch. So, you know, a lot of the specific writing of this was absolutely fun, and they did a great job. Given knowing that we knew what we were going to do.
Rich, when you feel like a sketch gets in a rut like this, I mean, what do you think the answer is? Is the answer to make it bigger? Is the answer to take the characters and completely change up the scenario?
I always think, as the fan of the show, I always think break the format. Even if you don't have to break it 100%, don't have it just be the exact beats over and over again to where we know, oh, and then the return wasn't the same. And then the, like, I thought there could have been a nice turn here. They could have done something different. You know, just mix up. Maybe some of it could have been quite positive, or maybe she could have interacted with Cecily and Casey Affleck's characters for the first time. You know, like in this fictitious situation or something, or question the reality, the validity of it, something so that we weren't caught in what I always called the Mad Libs of SNL, which lives and dies by the writing. And in this case, while the writing was still good, they couldn't get past the fact that it was Mad Libs.
Yeah, it seems like she always ends up losing her pants and then has to come up with two pairs of names for her private parts, yes. Which again is, you know, ends up being funny, but it is sort of like, how many different times can we come up with different names for the same body parts?
Yeah, because the first time we didn't know it was going to be a runner, so it was just hilarious to A, that they were well written, and B, that it kept going and going. The second time, we've already experienced it, but we don't remember it as a pattern yet, because we've only seen the sketch 6 months earlier once before, so it's still a bit novel, even though we're like, oh, okay, I kind of see where we're going with this. And then this time, you know, right, at, you know, when she talks about her cooter and tooter, you know, it's still funny, but it was just like, oh, right, okay, we're doing that, okay. Got it.
Yeah. The grassy knoll and the gassy hull was also mentioned. Rich, what did you think of Mrs. Crinkle Mouse and Shart?
You know, all fine enough. I don't know that there was anything all that funny about or different about the Shart character or Mrs. Nothing here was, I thought, particularly that funny. I mean, again, even the idea of sort of, you know, her sort of knocking Cecily's boob is such, you know, we basically have seen this exact, you know, it's such a slight tweak on the same formula. So I was really just like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's bring in James to talk about some of the music from this episode. And I guess, James, first off, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Very well. As good as...
Other than the voice,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Again, yeah, hopefully it's not a total disaster.
Looking forward to a little break.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But that being said, James, let's talk about the Run DMC styled Christmas in Hollis parody of Jingle Barack.
So Run DMC had one of the very first kind of hip hop Christmas songs in 1987 with Christmas in Hollis. And it was a big crossover hit. And I know from my days working record retail that the Run DMC Christmas album still a solid seller every year. And I'm sure that continues to be true. And so this was this is pretty much a straight up parody of the song and the video. And, you know, I don't know why if you guys are Run DMC fans, but I thought it was really terrific with Keenan playing Run and Chance the Rapper subbing in as DMC. And you know, just, you know, rewriting it for the last Christmas with Barack, I thought was a really brilliant spin. And then I also enjoyed quite a few of the presents that were scattered throughout the video as well.
And I will tag on too, James. I, you know, here's a shocker. Never seen that video before. I only have a passing knowledge of the real Run DMC. I know them mostly from collaborating with Aerosmith, so that says more about me than them. And yet I thought this was very fun, very funny. Not so I know enough about Run DMC to know sort of the archetypes and to know sort of that they were doing them specifically. But all the specifics I thought were very fun. And I thought this was great energy. Chance the Rapper just dripped charisma in this. I thought he was just so good. And I can't tell you whether it was an impression or whether he was just dressed like him doing his own thing, but he was excellent here.
It's pretty close to an impression. I mean, Chance doesn't sound like that normally. And he certainly has a unique voice in his own music. So I thought it was pretty bang on DMC impression. And then DMC himself, of course, shows up at the end, which was a nice nod, I thought, you know, just to in terms of both celebrating them and a good holiday gag.
Yes.
And excellent. Then Leslie Jones makes an appearance as is that a Salt and Peppa parody, James?
It is indeed. No sign of the real Salt or Peppa. But yeah, I thought Leslie Jones did a terrific job as well.
Talking about Joe Biden.
Everybody was clearly having a good time.
Yeah, that was very fun. I did enjoy it. I watched it a second time today. Very funny stuff. Okay. Then, James, what about the actual music of Chance the Rapper?
So what's curious about, I thought about Chance doing this Run DMC parody was it's the most old school, you know, hip hop reference you could really get with the big glasses and the gold chains. And Chance is really the opposite of that. Chance is literally rewriting the rules of hip hop. He forced the Grammys. He didn't force them to, but he made a record so good that it forced the Grammys to change the rules of the Grammys in order for him to qualify, because he's never sold a record in his life. He has always given away all of the music that he's ever made. And as a result, with no sales, you don't qualify for a Grammy. And so they literally had to rewrite the rules in order for Chance, because his album Coloring Book is clearly one of the best albums of the year. And they were just going to look foolish by essentially ignoring it on a technicality. And so they had to rewrite the rules to let Chance in. As a result, he was nominated for 7 Grammys, including Album of the Year last week. So he's capping off a pretty spectacular year. The first song is called Finish Line / Drown. And one of the things that I love about Chance is that he takes on some heavy subject matter sometimes, but everything about him is characterized by joy. All of his music is joyous. All his performance always seems really joyous. All the gospel influence that he infuses into things, everything seems like a celebration, even at times when, you know, he's addressing some dark subject matter in his lyrics. He's one of the most fun performers, I think, to watch. And, you know, it just oozes fun. Even the fact that he's in the, for this first song, he's kind of dressed like Mario. Like he's, you know, with the red overalls and the three cap in different colors is also a signature. So he's sort of weirdly a cartoon, but he's also an insanely talented guy and you know, making this super interesting music. And certainly no doubts about whether or not he was playing to a backing track, given that he seemingly spontaneously prompted his drummer into an impromptu solo in the middle of the first song. So
good job by Chance the Rapper the first time around. Do you encourage that, James? Should a artist like do something to prove that they're not doing a lip sync on SNL?
It seemed to me that SNL gave Chance a lot of freedom. The first time I watched both songs, I thought they both ran longer than average for an SNL performance. I mean, Prince comes in, Prince gets as much time as he wants, but this is Chance's first time as a headliner on the show. He appeared with Kanye West earlier this year, but the first song ran almost 5 minutes and the second song ran 4.5 minutes, which I think is 9 minutes of SNL time is a lot to give over to essentially a relatively new music artist. So I thought it was, I think they just gave him time to play and he, you know, wanted to play around. He also brought in a fellow Chicago rapper, No Name, for the first song, the young woman who came on and had a very appropriately gospel-tinged, prayerful verse at the end of the song. So yeah, I thought they gave Chance a lot of freedom to kind of do what he wanted.
Okay.
Now, that second song, did he write that during the cold open while the writers were writing the monologue? Because if he did, he probably had 3 extra minutes after he finished writing it.
Are you saying that about the song? About same drugs?
Yes. Did he write that like on the way to the stage? It felt like an improv musical that just was writing it on the fly.
Rich, I'm surprised because I think that there are some hidden depths to that song that you're not giving it credit for. I mean, the idea of not doing the same drugs anymore, it's about, I think the song's really about old friends that have grown apart and their lifestyles have changed. And they, you know, where those sort of friends where, you know, you still feel the bond that you used to have, but you don't share the life that you used to share. And so the difficulty and challenge of sort of connecting with those friends as your lives go in different directions. That's what Same Drugs is about. But and I think it's a terrific song. It's one of my favorites on his record. But, you know. Genius comes in many forms.
Well, hopefully this song doesn't apply to us in a few years.
I'm still going to call you guys once a week just to talk about the show. Right?
That's fine.
Fine by me. I love it. Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Well, great job, James. Anything else on Chance?
You guys will get to it, but another throwback move from Chance when he breaks out the hammer dance later on and as the Three Wise Men. So,
yeah.
My prediction is that we will see Chance as a host, if not a host and also musical guest, probably next year. Although I think we'll see Nicki Minaj do that first.
Okay. Wow.
So I'm gonna leave on those predictions.
James is calling his shot. Well, James, again, thank you for all your contributions to the show. And really, you know, you saw a hole where Rich and I were completely inadequately covering the music on this show. And you came in and really did help us out. And so thank you so much, James. You can follow James on Twitter at Exclaim Editor.
I appreciate you having me. And it's been tons of fun. Thanks.
Same okay, James. Here. All right. Take care.
Bye, James.
All the best. Bye. All right, Rich, you ready to talk some weekend update?
Yeah, I don't have a lot written down that I want to quote from. As I said, I was feeling a little under the weather this morning, but I thought another very solid weekend update. I don't know that every joke hit, but I mean, when is that ever going to happen? But I feel like 2 weeks in a row, we've really kind of settled in. They're really sort of sharpening their fangs on the Donald Trump stuff and spent, you know, a very large amount of time to that. Now, given that is the current events of the day. So I don't think there was anything going on that they avoided, but a lot of fun here, and I think that the groove that they were in, I felt like there was even a few jokes. I wish I could comment and tell you which ones that I felt that Michael Che very specifically delivered very well in a very cutting way. So a lot of fun here.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that the guys were starting to get into a good role. I did like the red flags joke that they opened with. Yep. I thought that was very strong. Yep. And then they got into later on in Weekend Update, they, you know, they went back to the Trump thing and they were continuing. Like, they had a couple of really good ones in a row. I liked Colin's joke about Donald Trump chose the Exxon CEO because it was 3 cents cheaper than the Chevron CEO across the street, which was very good.
Yes, yes.
And also the Russian Medal of Friendship given to Tillerson is the second highest award that they could give you other than the President of the United States. I thought that was good.
Yeah.
Rich, yeah. We had Armisen return to the update desk. Always a dicey proposition.
Yeah, I mean, and this is one we've talked about the childhood best friends format before. You know, we haven't seen this since season 39, so we're going back 3 years to the Lena Dunham episode when he came back to do that. You know, and I'm always suspect of a lot of the characters that that Fred Armisen does on Weekend Update. This is a bit that I think the first time he and Vanessa Bayer did this on the show, I was pro, and then we started doing it so much, and this is a very Mad Lib style bit where it's basically the same thing every time. So I think I got burned on it very quickly, but I think the fact that it's been 3 years, we haven't seen this in 3 years, it made it fun. Ironically, the last time they did it 3 years ago, they were also Putin's best friends. It was very specific. So I thought it was just a fun bit of inspired silliness that they threw in here. I liked that, you know, usually when they've done these pieces, they just talk about different things about the person, where here we really just basically tracked the storyline of going to a party at Putin's house and not bringing gifts and they just kept going back to the same story. So, you know, all very silly, all sort of disposable fun. But I thought it was fun to see. I think Vanessa Bayer is great in this, although obviously Fred is the alumni returning. I think Vanessa really shines in this. She did very fun. And then the tag at the end, I think we've seen this before, where the anchor is sort of roped into the same. I love the person, but you know, that was not necessarily new. But in general, I was surprised that I did really like it.
Rich, is this bit highly scripted, or is it more improvisational when they do it? Is it like a Garth and Kat? Because I was wondering, as they're going along, it does feel like that.
You know, it's a good question, because, you know, normally I would always have said that this is scripted, especially because they're sort of picking up on. I think it was mostly scripted, because there are times that they were picking up on each other's beats that I think had to be pre-planned. But there was a point where they were saying something about what Putin says. And in a similar style, you had Fred saying it and Vanessa like saying it one like a syllable behind him, where it almost seemed like she was copying him. So I do wonder if that is a little bit of the way that you get Fred Armisen to come back, is to give him to some pockets where they can improvise. If they did, I bet that it was improvising within a fairly structured piece, as opposed to Garth and Kat, which is really just the two of them making it up the whole time.
Okay, Rich, we also had the return of the rejected jokes segment from Colin and Michael. Do you like when they do this?
I've never understood the premise of this, because after every time they do it, I always feel like, oh, I understand why those jokes got cut the first time. None of them were terrible. I think one of them was particularly funny, but for the most part, I think it was the Chipotle joke about the announcement came from through the bathroom door or something. But in general, I always have felt like it's been a weaker way to go out, and this for me was no exception. It was a little bit weaker for me.
Right. It's not like that these are the uncensored jokes that we couldn't tell you because they got cut by NBC. They're just the jokes that we thought weren't funny enough to tell you the first time around, but here they are now.
Yeah, and you would think that having now done this a few times, they might have learned that, oh, in fact, pound for pound, these jokes don't connect with the audience the second time, so maybe we should not do this anymore. But you know what? God bless them. Keep doing what you're doing.
Okay. Anything else from Weekend Update?
No, a good way to go out. Solid work from everyone.
Okay. Let's talk about the New York Now sketch, which was hosted by Jen Binks and Sarah Hors, which I might have been the funniest joke in the whole sketch. I don't necessarily know why we needed to do such a buildup with the news desk, throwing it out to Kyle Mooney, who was on Long Island covering a nativity play.
Yeah, and I would underscore that by saying, while there was some real fun in this sketch, I don't think I ever knew what the point was, because it seemed like where we were going is obviously that this nativity scene is actually, this play is actually not nearly as funny as everybody is saying it is, and yet Kyle Mooney, the reporter, who you think is going to be the straight man and be like, I don't get it, nothing's funny, was instead laughing along with the hilarity. So it almost felt like this sort of odd character piece of everyone is believing this thing that the audience knows not to be true. And I kept waiting for them to cut back to, the two anchors to interplay. So I thought there was some fun within it, but I kept waiting for the big payoff. I kept waiting for the, okay, so we've invested in this for what? And it just sort of ended. So I was definitely a little let down by the sketch.
They kept saying that, like, no, kids couldn't do this. Kids couldn't make a joke that was as good as this. And I thought at some point we were going to see young people come in and do something much funnier or much better than what they were doing. But it was just like something they just kept going back to.
Especially when Mikey Day shows up in the sketch as the son of one of the people, and yet it's not a situation where he was in it and he got cut. So, you know, instead they sort of went with she has no time to deal with his issues about drugs and sex because she's got to do this play. But yes, I felt like I kept waiting for there to be a bigger payoff that never came.
I wonder if this was based on something that they saw and then it just didn't come through in the translation. Like there might have been like some news thing that was covered, which was probably hilarious to the writers, but it just did not come through in the writing of the sketch.
Yes. And I will say the idea of people putting on a performance that they think is hilarious, that is not hilarious to everyone else, is something that I deeply understand. And it is, I have not had the same feelings as, well, I guess I can't say anyone in the sketch because no one was calling out, but you know, you're waiting for the reaction here. We're waiting for the straight man, you know, we're waiting for, the straight man in the sketch to say, I don't get it. That's not funny. Instead, we all thought it was funny. So, I didn't get it, but I can see where this might have come from.
All right, Rich, let's talk about another pre-tape piece, one that's been getting a lot of buzz online. Kate McKinnon returns as Hillary Clinton with a Love Actually parody. I think it might have been 2 years ago that SNL did another Love Actually parody with Pete Davidson holding up cue cards. They go back to the well again. This time, Hillary Clinton is trying to recruit one of the electors to vote for her in Monday's electoral college decision.
Yes, and I can't remember if the Pete Davidson was live or if it was cut for time, but it was done live. It was not a pre-tape. And I think so many good things to say about the sketch. But first, I'm so glad they did this as a pre-tape because, you know, the mechanics of having the cue cards would have, I think we would have lost so much of the rhythm had we done this as a live sketch. But I thought this was great. And not only was she great, Cecily Strong was so great playing the Keira Knightley role. And just, you know, she did so much with just a look and a giggle and a laugh that really, really sold it. That without that, This is cute, but it's not great. So I want to make sure she gets called out. But I thought such a funny, because it's not simply we're just going to map, hey, let's take Love Actually and do something silly. It took a very real, you can imagine what Hillary might want to do if she could bump into an elector. So I loved, I thought it was such a deep well to go to, and they were able to play it in so many different ways with some direct calls out to the Love Actually bit that, to be honest, probably none of us really remember until we went back and watched it a second time. But also that, you know, just new stuff that they did that, you know, very specific to Trump and the electorate and the $1,000 check. All of that was beautiful. So to me, this was without question the sketch of the night.
Yeah, they really got in some good Hillary mannerisms into the cue cards where she's going on, and Cecily's like, all right, let's get to the point. And Hillary Clinton has never actually seen a movie, which was really, really strong. Now, Rich, let's see how well I know you. Did you pause and read all of the cue cards when Hillary drops down her list of why Trump should not be the president?
You know, I didn't, because I could. We watched it live, which we did not have on DVR, the live New York feed. And then I was unfortunately under the weather, so I did not get to watch this a second time. But it is the kind of thing that, of course, I would do. I just haven't had time to. Did you?
Yes, I did. So most of them were not jokey. They were all like pretty straight things, except for number 7, which was a little bit self-referential. Which was, he won't acknowledge Aleppo, but tweets about Saturday Night Live.
Love it. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah. So I know this was a really, really fun sketch overall.
And I also liked the pace of it, that we didn't have to, that they didn't make the choice to set up very early on that this is an elector at Christmas time. Like, they really sort of let it unfold, like, what are we doing here? And I mean that in a good way. Like, you know, okay, this is a parody of Love Actually. It's Hillary Clinton, but it sort of built in a very nice way how we got there. So I think also the pacing of the writing was really excellent.
Yeah. So I'm on the same page. This was great. Okay. So why don't we segue, Rich, to something that we've talked about two times before. Yeah. Let's talk about Santa's naughty elves.
Yeah. You know, so we'll go from the good to the not so good. You know, I think the hard part about watching this was not only, oh, man, I can't believe we're bringing this back, but also the feeling of, oh, is this now going to become an annual tradition? You know, we had done this last Christmas with Ryan Gosling. And originally we had done it with Louis C.K. in May. It was not a Christmas thing. He was a shoemaker and they were cobbling his shoes for him. Mm-hmm. But clearly we've moved into a Christmas tradition. You know, again, this isn't even really Mad Libs. This is really just like take the sketch out and just do it again with a couple of small tweaks to it. That said, I do think Keenan is funny. I think Vanessa is very funny in this, but I don't think that Casey Affleck we're now asking him to be sort of, you know, part of the goofiness. And I don't think he was nearly as strong as Ryan Gosling was a year ago in having fun with it and being over the top and being silly. I felt like the energy kind of kept stalling a little bit when we were dealing with Casey Affleck's character here.
Yeah, I think that if my memory serves, I think I liked this originally, but it does get to a point where it just gets dark and it's not particularly hilarious at this point.
Yeah. And very repetitive. So I think that was. Yeah. So, you know, again, you know, I'm going to play like I'm, you know, suddenly a writer on SNL. But I would say, you know, as a fan, you know, I really go out with this to SNL of like, you've got these characters that you like, you see something very funny in them. The audience clearly has a reaction to it at times that is quite positive. Why just do it, like take them and do something different with them and mix it up and maybe have them all be small so that we can see some real interaction with the sort of straight man in the sketch or something, just, or actually have them slap their butts for once. I mean, do something that's just evolves it 10%. I'm not even asking for 50 or 75%. Just evolve it 10% to give it some life. I hope that, you know, when we're talking about this, you know, next year at Christmas time, we've seen some evolution to the sketch.
Okay, Rich. We have one last sketch from this episode. And I thought this was a funny idea of the Brooklyn bar where every conversation starts off by somebody saying like, I can't believe I'm going to ask this to you, but I might be crazy, but I'm just going to go out there and say it.
So here's my theory on this sketch. Somehow the writers had already found out that this was our last podcast of the run of, mm-hmm. and they thought, as a Christmas gift to Rich, let's end the last episode of the last podcast with a huge
oh no.
boy. It's like they wrote it with that intent. Like every line was geared, like they imagined me on my couch with Jen with my hand to my head going, oh boy.
Even for 12:55. Rich, you thought this was a boy.
This was rough. This was very, very rough. This to me was so rough that when Kate McKinnon came out as the paramedic, I imagined what it must have been like for her during that sketch as they're eating it on stage and the audience is just stone face cold and they're getting nothing and her thinking, I got to go out there. Really? I still have to go out there. Can't they just call it early? Why do I have to jump out there? And then, of course, she does, you know, full force. But I thought this was rough. Very, very rough.
What about when God came on?
A nice ending to the sketch. I think also Casey Affleck, and I know I'm sort of bagging on the guy. I mean, it's his first time out. But I think, you know, there were certain points where we really were relying on his comedic timing, you know, and it also really slowed it down. It didn't necessarily heighten. So, I am, of course, afraid that we will see this again. Very rough for me. Very rough.
Okay. So then, Rich, the goodbyes with Casey Affleck. We have Alec Baldwin in the building, Fred Armisen, John Goodman. Everybody stick around?
No, we did not see Alec or John Goodman. And again, I think there's a pattern to, you know, Alec tends to show up when the other person shows up and doesn't show up when the other person doesn't. So, you know, you know, it seemed like really fun. Good nights. You know, I think it was fine. I think this, you know, the end, you know, they have now, you know, the longest break that they will have during the season. So I think there's always such a really warm energy, even for people, you know, that had very, very little screen time. There's still a really warm feeling here. And I think everyone really enjoyed themselves.
Yeah. The next SNL is going to be on January 14th, I believe, with Felicity Jones of Rogue One.
Yep. And Sturgill Simpson of brother of Jessica and Ashley Simpson. Yes. One of the Simpson members from the cartoon show. I don't know.
Rich, have you gone out to see Rogue One yet?
No, I am still rogue on seeing Rogue One. Yes. I think I'm going to, I don't know if I'm going to pass or not, but I haven't heard great things just yet.
Okay. Wow. Big hit, big opening weekend for the Rogue One. I think that there's already talks for the cast to return for Rogue Two.
I'm sure.
Very exciting. Sure.
Bring it on.
So, all right. Let's take some questions here. The great Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, who has made so many of these SNL podcasts possible, has put together for us. Zach Brooks says, Cold Open and Jingle Barack had some fantastic jokes. Same writers.
It would be unlikely that that was the case. You never know, but it would be unlikely, but possible. So, but a lot, I agree, a lot of great jokes in them.
Okay. Colleen wants to know, why do you think Bobby always hangs off to the stage left shyly during the good nights? Does he have a spot?
He does. He does. And Taron Killam used to stand there with him. They always stand there very much off to the side. He usually leans in and he does a wave. Sometimes he has a little sign. Sometimes he has a shirt on that he'll show to people. It's an interesting choice. And I don't know. And it's always been that way. I think it started when he was a featured player and he sort of hung off. I don't know if he's a bit of a creature of habit and likes the tradition and that, or if he sort of likes not being sort of front and center. And, you know, there is the awkwardness of the cast just standing there while the host is actually thanking people and saying goodnight. So he may just sort of like being out a bit. And then he comes in to sort of, you know, thank people and thank the host and stuff.
Okay. It's a good tradition.
Yeah.
Then Johnny DeSilvera says, what changes to SNL are you two expecting to see, if any, when the show returns in 2017? So you don't think there's going to be any cast changes between now and the start of in the new year, right?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, I think clearly, you know, when you look at, let's just say, the rest of the season in general, sort of then going into the final, you know, who, because obviously we won't be talking about it more, you know, most notably, you know, Melissa Villaseñor is someone who, you know, came on as the third repertory player this season and yet has been getting almost no screen time. I think the fact that she had a line in the Dunkin' Donuts bit and her line is cut off by Casey Affleck's character was very indicative of, you know, of trouble. So I think she's really talented. I would really hope, I think that it would behoove the show, armchair quarterbacking for a second, to let her do some impressions or even do a sketch in the 12:50 slot, even if it doesn't kill. I think that the audience needs to sort of be socialized her a little bit more and see her as an impressionist instead of just playing the wife, the hostess, the Dunkin' Donuts employee, before she's really going to sort of connect. So, so I think that's an issue that, you know, obviously I think the big issue going into next year is going to be, what do they do about Trump? I think that's, you know, an interesting sign. And obviously having someone like Rex Tillerson played by, you know, another alumni is also not a long-term solution. So I think they're going to have to really figure this out. And I suspect that we'll start seeing them try to figure it out going into the new year.
But that being said, the Secretary of State, other than the Janet Reno by Will Ferrell, I feel she wasn't, that's Attorney General. You know, that's not necessarily a character that gets a lot of play on SNL.
No, I think without getting too political, the fact that a CEO of the largest oil company in the world is going to be the Secretary of State, it should be fodder for a lot more biting humor than he got picked because the other guy was 3 cents cheaper. So I hope that they do more with this, assuming that it happens. Of course, we don't actually know that he will be. I guess I was just saying more. It's a little bit indicative of, you know, do we have a cast problem? You know, do we have a larger cast problem that we need to solve? And I think, you know, when you look at people like Sashira Zameda, who we all like, you know, a lot here, you know, getting, you know, less screen time than Alex Moffat or Mikey Day, you know, you really wonder what's going on. Pete Davidson, again, not in this episode, again, you know, clearly out on some form of sabbatical or doing another project. But, you know, but I think on the male side, I think there's some holes that they're going to have to continue to fill. Mikey and Alex, great additions to the cast, but don't necessarily fill those holes just yet. So, you know, and just, you know, as far as the cast goes, and I'll leave this here, I love this cast. I think it's a very strong cast. I think it's a very cohesive cast, but we still have a star problem. SNL is made or broken by its stars. And, you know, Kate McKinnon, you know, is right now the only even close to a star. And I think to call her a star really sort of, you know, makes us forget how big Will Ferrell was, how big Eddie Murphy was, how big, you know, Dana Carvey was, that we don't have that yet. And I think that, you know, if someone doesn't bubble up pretty quickly, then I think it's going to behoove them to make some bigger cast changes, losing some people that maybe I like a lot, that I think are very competent, serviceable, funny people. But, you know, you got to keep rotating the lineup until you get a star.
So, Rich, the first SNL podcast that we did was on November 21st, 2011. We talked about Jason Segel hosting for the first time. That was during the, I believe we had the likes of Sudeikis, Wig, Hader.
It was the last year of Andy Samberg and Kristen Wiig. You know, you had, you know, we were, you know, see, you know, Taron Killam, Kate McKinnon just came on at the end of that year, Jay Farrow. So, yeah, it was really sort of the beginning of this regime change. You know, you know, looking at this list, the only people that were in that episode that are still on the air is Bobby Keenan and Vanessa. So, you know, a fairly large turnaround in the 5 years we've been doing this.
We've completely shepherded in a new cast, Rich.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. Do you feel like SNL is in a better place now here in season 42 than it was in season 37?
I think it is, because, you know, really, I think that the Trump piece gave them something that, you know, became water cooler moment. I mean, you know, the entire, you know, up until the emergence of Trump, you know, our podcast has been covering the Barack years of SNL, to which they never really made hay. Fred Armisen originally, and then Jay Farrow, but they never really made him a dynamic character. We were never sharing links to the, you know, the Barack cold open that everyone had to see. And this year they really turned that around. I think that was very strong. I also think that a good sign of the show is that we've got a real nice bench strength of Weekend Update characters. So, you know, while I don't need to see Willie ever again, I think that in general, you know, we are not just going to the same two or three people. You know, and a testament to that, I was surprised we didn't see Drunk Uncle this weekend. I really thought we would see, you know, Drunk Uncle for the holidays. And they did not burn him out. I think by the time we see Drunk Uncle again, you know, it'll have been a nice break. So I think that's really strong. You know, so, you know, and we're seeing more fun pre-tape showing up at all different times in the show, which is nice. It's not just the voice of, you know, the Lonely Island, and that the Lonely Island, you know, we live or die by, you know, what they deliver each week. You know, we're seeing very different voices show up in our pre-tapes, which I really appreciate.
Rich, 5 years from now, is Keenan still in the cast?
No, but I could easily see him coming back for a lot of cameos. He could be rolling in just to, you know what? We need a Willie one more time. Let's bring back David Ortiz, even though David Ortiz hasn't played baseball in years.
Yeah. Okay. Rich, any other final thoughts?
No, you know, I will say for the show, it was fun watching it last night. But when, you know, before the first commercial break, when the card came up to say, you know, returning January 14th, Felicity Jones and Sturgill Simpson, it was a very weird feeling to be like, oh, we will not be discussing that episode. SNL continues without us. You know, SNL has been around 42 years and running. It will outlive all of us. It is an institution that I still love. And even like last week's episode that I was very down on, it does not dampen my spirit as an SNL fan. And that will live on whether we're talking about it here or in another forum or just to each other.
All right. And of course, Rich, from time to time, will write blog posts and always tweet about the show and all sorts of stuff like that. So make sure you follow Rich on Twitter at RichTack. Anything else you want to put out there, Rich?
You know, actually, thanks to this great suggestion of Scott St. Pierre, who doesn't get enough credit for all he does. I'm doing a live storytelling show that I'm producing once a month here in Los Angeles. And next week next month, January 22nd, we're going to do it Facebook Live as well. So I'll send out a tweet. But if you're around at 12:30 p.m. Pacific time, wherever you are and you are on Facebook, you can see me and some very fun and funny people telling some true first person stories in Silver Lake, which will be really fun.
All right. Well, Rich, it's been such a pleasure to get to talk to you about this show every week. You're such a wealth of knowledge about this show, and it really was, I think, speaking for many of the listeners as well. We're very lucky to be able to get your expertise on all this stuff.
Well, we'd not have done it without you. It's so fun. I mean, this is just, you know, such a highlight of every week to sit and just chat and just have fun. And, you know, all the participation of all of the people who have, you know, sent in questions, joined the chat room, you know, comment on it. I feel like it's been part of a big community, which has been a wonderful experience.
Okay. Also, thanks so much again to James Keaston, again to the aforementioned Scott St. Pierre, who really has edited all these shows and gets the live show up every week. So thanks to Scott, who is the engine behind this podcast and many others that I do. So thanks again to Scott. And I think that's about it. Rich, anything else?
That's it. No, right. I think that's it. All good. We're all good.
All right. Until we have some more SNL to talk about, take care, everybody. Have a good night. Bye.
Bye-bye.